Welcome to the European CME Forum podcast. European CME Forum is a not-for-profit organization that promotes multi-channel discussion on matters relating to European and global CME CPD. My name is Eugene Pozniak. I'm the program director of European CME Forum. In today's episode, I chat with Good CME Practice Group members Diana von Brackel from Kennes Group and Monica Ghidinelli from AO Foundation. The Good CME Practice Group, or GCMEP, is a membership organization for CME providers based in Europe. The focus of today's episode is, what does independent mean in independent medical education, or IME? Hello, and welcome to this Good CME Practice Group webinar. This is the fourth in the GCMEP webinar series, where members address topics that we think are of interest, but also what you think of interest as well. My name is Eugene Pozniak. I'm the Program Director of European CME Forum. I'm also Managing Director of CME Learning. I'm also a founding member of the Good CME Practice Group. And with me today will be two other members. And between us, we will spend the next 30 minutes or so unraveling this topic. So the topic today is about IME. Independent medical education, and more specifically, you know, what does the independent bit mean, especially from the perspective of an education provider? And we'll use the term education provider in the sort of the broadest sense, you know, whether it's a professional education company, and that can be a commercial organization or a not-for-profit, but it can also be a medical society, it can be a publisher, or even a hospital department, you know, putting together education for their staff. So to today in our panel, I'd like to introduce Monica and Diana. Perhaps Monica, can you start, please?
Hi, I'm Monica Ghidinelli, and I'm working in the AO Foundation, that is a medical society. And we provide medical education, and I'm involved in, in the accreditation process and also in research medical education.
Great, thank you. Diana?
My name is Diana van Brackel. I'm Senior Manager Continuing Education for Kennes Group. And Kennes Group is a PCO specialized in organizing medical and scientific conferences. Next to that, we also organize different medical education activities online and previously also live. We do receive also funding and sponsorship from industry for setting up these medical education programs.
Brilliant. Thank you. So it's already interesting that we got two different types of provider with us. So we should get some interesting insight now. So to start off today, I'd like to ask you first, Diana, IME, what do you understand by the term independent medical education, and where has this terminology come from?
I think it's a very interesting question, and I think a lot of us have also different perspectives, different ideas about it. But in general, I think independent medical education does follow the process where it could be accredited for CME. And that means that medical education is created and implemented independently from its funders. So it means that independent medical education has, no one has really an influence over the content. So at least not the supporters directly involved in setting up this program.
Okay. Monica, what do you think of this?
So I completely agree with Diana. And of course, independent from influence, so really starting from patient problems and not having anyone controlling your education. But I want also to, because what is independent medical education? What is CME? What is CPD? I mean, we have different terminology, and sometimes in Europe we overlap CME and CPD. But really, I mean, we With CME, we also intend continued professional development because, like for the UMS, we call them the European CME credits, but they also are covering, let's say, faculty development or anything that is continuous professional development.
Okay. Yeah. So I think, Monica, I agree in what you're also saying is that it's not only the accreditation part, but that it's also important when setting up medical education that we look at the lifelong learning circle of healthcare professionals.
Yeah, so you're coming out with quite a few terminologies there as well. And actually, if it's possible, should we approach this theme by sort of individual topics that you've already started mentioning? So if we start with funding in independent medical education, how can you see that it's independent by the way the funding has arrived? So maybe, Diana, you mentioned that first, if you can start this one.
Yeah, I think what we see there are different ways, but one of them is through education grants. And education grants can be received in response, for example, to an RFP. An RFP is a request for proposal. And in this RFP, the provider outlines actually how he or she will develop, but also implement the educational activity. And the organization that are setting up then the independent medical education activities need to show in this proposal that they are able to create appropriate education, which is balanced, but also set up independently. So the content that will be presented in the independent medical education activity needs to be at least cannot be biased. And I think that's a very important factor that needs to be shown, especially to funders also, that the education activity is set up independently and not biased. And the content is definitely in such a way presented.
Okay. So then just staying with the funding side, Monica, what do you think of the just attracting the funding and using this?
Yeah, I think that in the ideal world, we will have only, these grants. But there are other sources that we can receive from companies. And these, we can have also, in our independent medical education, we can have also a part that is a sponsored education. Of course, if we talk about accreditation, it has to be separated in a different place, in a different room, and really stated that is not independent. But we can receive fundings in that way. And also, and that is completely compliant.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's a good point. So the exhibit halls, they exist. And of course, there is something there. And how does that tie in with the response to RFPs and the independent grants that you were talking about, Diana? Using funding where obviously the funder expects something in return. How do you find the management of this?
I think it's also because when we speak about, for example, the exhibit booths, there you see indeed that the funder wants to get directly something in return. And in practice, for example, when organizing, I'll speak now about an online event, which is something I think we got used to in the last 2 years, there it's very important that you keep this separation so that you're actually really able to show that in a certain part, there is this this direct sponsorship. And their companies are able to present their products, their companies, their logos, etc. Then next to that, you have also the educational areas and the science areas, because I disagree with that in the promotional sponsorship part, there can't be education. It's just a different type of education. So in the educational science halls, you will have more the independent medical education, because that means that the education set up there is set up completely independently from industry. So that means that it can be funded indeed through industry, but it is, for example, funded in such a way that multiple sponsors have been involved or supporters, not sponsors, but supporters, and that the education has been set up by key opinion leaders, which were not directly linked to the companies itself. So that's one example of how you could organize that.
Yeah, and to add on Diana, I mean, different sources of fundings are possible. The really key element is that no one exert any control over the content that you are presenting. So that is the key.
Yeah, and I think what's important also is that with sponsorship, there is a direct benefit in it for the company. With independent medical education, it's the benefit to support the learning of healthcare professionals by improving their knowledge, the competencies. So it's more supporting healthcare in healthcare education in general.
Yeah, and it seems it's very clear in your minds where the funding is used, how it's used. And of course, this should be disclosed to the learner as well, so that everyone involved is actually clear where has the funding come from, what it's been used for, and if there are benefits coming back, such as an exhibition booth space or something, that it's clear that that's there, and that the independent medical education is completely independent of control, but that funding has been received under acceptable and compliant routes.
Yeah, and I think, Eugene, here you're touching on another very important principle, and that's transparency. Because when you're independent, you also want to show that you're actually independent and how you're doing that.
Yes, and it does open up a theme, well, it's something that we've talked about certainly in the Good CME practice group meetings, you know, terminology like unrestricted educational grants, things which end up being problematic because actually, you know, we've just spent quite a few minutes now talking about exactly how funding can be used, i.e. the restrictions with it. So there's no such thing as unrestricted educational grant. We can't take it in and upgrade our car, for example. Clearly, the money has to be used for that educational purpose. You know, the funder will give it under conditions. It'll be independent of control, of course, but the restrictions are there, not to do with the education, but just it's really the specifications around how it's used. And it would just be more helpful to use the term something like independent education grant when referring to the funding of IME when it comes in. Okay, now we started touching on content, actually, and it would be actually both of you have sort of you've said it's important to actually have independence of control of the content. But how does that actually manifest itself? Monica, can you explain a little bit more? You started sort of describing this with the professional practice gap, the needs assessment process, but how do you see this?
Yeah, I mean, in general, every independent medical education piece has to start with a needs assessment. So you have to define what is really needed for the physicians or for the surgeons to improve the patient quality of life, let's say. So, and then you have to identify the patient problem and also which is the clinical need and what is missing for having the best outcome possible. And then from there, you go and you think about what is the practice gap in the physicians and which activities you can develop for filling this gap. And of course, you have clinical competencies that are divided in three groups. So you have knowledge gaps, you have skills that are missing, or you have also attitudinal or behavioral, gaps. And in this way, you define the learning objectives and which activity you can use for these three different competencies. And of course, the faculty are, and you need the experts in the field to define, involve in this part in which they really have the hand-on, and they have the experience in their hospitals to create this. So you have really them thinking about those things. And of course, you have the educational list that drive also this process.
Now, it's a lovely description, yeah, of the whole sort of educational design approach. So then the next question will be, actually, well, we've already had a couple of questions coming in, and one asking about this. So if an activity like this is supported by a funder, how much, what can the funder be involved in?
At this point, I mean, when you define the learning objectives and so on, that cannot be involved at all at this point. That is clear.
And I do think it is important to say, because that's already what you do usually also in your RFP, is that you do disclose your learning objectives, needs assessment, where it's based upon, how the content delivery will look like, etc. But I think it's also important to mention that supporting companies can also not have any influence over the approval rounds of the content, or have actually really control of who's taking part in it.
Yeah, I cannot invite the faculty, cannot invite participants. I mean, at any stage, they cannot be involved.
Okay. Yeah, and there are some questions about suggestions. Well, say the RFP can give quite a lot of detail about the disease area or the people involved and things. So the drug company can actually make suggestions, but I think that it needs to be treated independently, as in it's driven by the faculty, and the actual information there is the education is goes through that design process that you've described, and it's not in answer to a brief, let's say, from a company. Another question's coming about, can the supporting company promote the CME activity? What do you think about that, Diana? You do a lot of meetings like this, and of course you want as many delegates as possible to attend.
Yeah, so can a supporting company
promote the CME activity? As in, just through the marketing promotion of the meeting itself. So it's nothing to do with the education, nothing to do with implementing the meeting. They're not going to be there or anything.
No, because it's this should be really done independently by the one who's in charge of this this activity. However, if a drug company thinks that this activity can be very relevant for certain doctors, and the content is set up at that activity completely independently, I don't foresee any direct problems there.
Yeah. And I mean, in theory, exactly, they cannot. But for example, I've seen sometimes that if they have a booth in a certain event, they can send emails to the participant list or to their own email list saying, I will be present in this booth at that event, and that we cannot control.
Yeah, one there, I think they are becoming already a bit too specific. But I understand completely what you're saying, because we do know that that's happening. But I think it's very important in general that we all keep very, that there is no bias eventually. Mm. So then there can be certain promotion, but only shared promotion more for the education involved. And then, you start questioning, because now, you're already starting questioning and doubting, like, okay, but what can be done and what cannot be done?
No, that's great. Oh, so thank you to the questioner for that, because that's really put us on the spot, hasn't it? But to think it through, and I tend to, when looking at educational activities, I sort of think of a large European Medical Society meeting or something, and clearly many companies are supporters of those meetings, they're exhibitors there and things, you know, so is it allowed for a drug company to say ESMO's a great meeting, you should go to it? So I think on sort of that basis, it's a case, well, yes, clearly we're all sensible. It's obvious that the company has no control over the content beyond maybe running a satellite symposium or something. But we just need to be careful. And I think that's the main thing, is to protect the independence and for it to be clear that there isn't any control. But what third parties do to talk about other third parties meetings is sort of outside of our bubble in a way. Yeah, it looks like we already have some questions coming in about the accreditation side of things. You know, we have all these definitions, and actually we've been talking about IME from the perspective of a provider, how to design, implement, promote the meeting. We've talked about the funding, but as with all these definitions, ultimately we are looking to have this activity accredited for CME. It's very clear from, let's say, the ACCME and their standards, and also from membership of the Good CME Practice Group. You know, we sort of clarify what kind of accreditation is a demonstration of independence. But how do you see things as far as that stamp of accreditation, the CME credit, validating that an activity is truly independent? What are your thoughts on that, Monica?
So in theory, all accredited education should be independent, because that is what we think. But it's also true that not all the independent medical education is accredited. But sometimes it happens that there are activities that are not independent that have been accredited. And what do you think, Diana?
Yeah,
do you agree?
No, that's I totally completely agree, Monica, because we're not living in an ideal world. And although all independent medical education should be accreditable for CME, we see in practice what you mentioned already, that not all accrediting bodies recognize this as such. And that's also why certain medical education developed by industry sometimes also ends up to being accredited. And we see that especially on a national level happening.
Yeah, we certainly see it in the national level, some European level as well. And it helps to have these kind of discussions to actually bring out the independent side of the story, because not all organizations, especially if you're looking at someone in outside of your own silo, your own stakeholder group, it's difficult to understand how that group is working. And it gets tough to actually spot where there might be transgressions like this. But we heard at the recent European CME Forum meeting, of course, you know, the International Academy of CPD Accreditors have now published their definition. So we should put some of these links in the chat. They have a number of domains, and one of them is actually looking specifically at independence, and it looks like fantastic sort of international standards for this, but as you've both mentioned, it's not really implemented, especially in Europe, and that's what we're looking for, and sort of being keeping up to date with what's going on. Actually, yesterday, you know, the Federation of Royal Colleges of Physicians in the UK sent out a message. And they've been updating their standards for CME accreditation, or CPD approval, as they call it in the UK. But the accreditation there is actually going back on the requirements for disclosure and transparency, for example. So it's not getting so strict. So they're finding it's quite tough for providers. And of course, there are a lot of hospital departments that develop education. Maybe the bureaucracy is a bit tough. So they've pulled back on that, and we're not sort of feels like we're not going forward enough with this. So it's quite tricky in all cases to make sure that when something is accredited, that, as you've just said, Diana, it's not necessarily truly independent.
Yeah, and I think that is hurting also the one that actually are doing real independent medical education. So I hope that in the future that will be less cases like that.
Yeah, there is a discussion also that we heard at the CME Forum from the industry side. It was with FPA coming out with their updated standards for funding of medical education. It's quite a bit of discussion there. Again, we'll try and provide some links probably after this webinar to some of this content. But so it's in industry's interest to define where they have control over funding and activities, and where they are completely arm's length. So through the transparency that we've been discussing, so that's really important. So it would be it would be good to have more of these standards adopted by the accreditors and also then for the providers, so that all providers actually assure, yeah, whether it's sort of promotional work or industry controlled education, and what is truly independent. Something going back to funding. What about mixtures of types of funding? So it's not all just industry supported, but what are your thoughts about doctors themselves, healthcare professionals, actually paying for their education, especially that it's sort of non-compliant now in Europe for drug companies to pay for delegate travel and accommodation? That was phased out between 10 years ago now, maybe. How do you see the actual healthcare professionals paying for their CME?
I'm now thinking out loud, because I think it's a very good question, especially when you look at it related to independency, and that's of course what I'm now doing. I don't see any issue with regards to independency directly, but then it depends on if this healthcare professional has more a tendency towards certain types of education, yes or no?
Yeah, but I mean, I have to say, in our experience at the AO Foundation, at least in Europe, they pay, so the physician pay for the education. Mm-hmm. While maybe in the US, they are less used to pay a large amount, let's say, because it depends. In our case, we have workshops, so they are more expensive than just lectures. So, but they are willing to pay to learn. So this is the good thing.
Now, I've just looked at the time we've been crunching through our half an hour. I will ask you one final question, actually, that's just come in, which is really interesting. Can product-related education be independent?
So for me, it depends who develops the education and which principle do you follow.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, because product-related education, yes, can be independent, but then it depends on how it's set up, how many products are there in the markets, for example, how do you present the differences between the products, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it really depends on how setting up the education itself.
Perfect. Yeah, and it sort of just ties in with everything that we've been discussing right from the very beginning about the educational design, how funding is managed. So that's a nice topic to end up on. So now our time's up. So thank you very much for joining us today, everybody. Thank you to Monica, to Diana. So this is the last webinar of the year. Keep an eye on your emails on LinkedIn, Twitter, or just gcmep.org for future activities. The next meeting is already, we've got it in our diaries for Thursday, 27th of January, 2022. So until then, I hope you have a good year end. Happy Thanksgiving for those who celebrate it. Happy Hanukkah, happy Christmas, happy New Year, and see you again in January. So thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
That was Good CME Practice Group members Diana Van Brackel, Monica Ghidinelli, and myself discussing what independent means in independent medical education. The Good CME Practice Group is a membership organization for CME providers based in Europe that aims to promote professionalism within the European CME provider community. More information can be found on the group's website, gcmep.org. Thank you for listening, and join us for more episodes as we explore all things CME CPD.